You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our words of wisdom are from Matthew chapter 5, verse 9, and Romans chapter 12, verses 9 through 21.
From Matthew, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God.
And from Romans, let love be genuine. Hate what is evil, hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord.
Rejoice in hope. Be patient in affliction. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Pursue hospitality to strangers.
Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be arrogant, but associate with the lowly. Do not claim to be wiser than you are.
Do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. If it is possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord.
Instead, if your enemies are hungry, feed them. If they are thirsty, give them something to drink. For by doing this, you will heap burning coals on their heads. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
I'm glad to be with you at the Fountains virtually at the moment, and on Sunday to be there in person to soak in that lovely architecture of your sacred space, maybe to walk the labyrinth, to hang out with people that have been nourished and nurtured and challenged by David Felton's challenging, insightful theological perspectives on Bible and Christianity over the years. Thank you to David for inviting me to share reflections today. The focus of what I want to talk about today is on the theme of peace. Jesus calls us to be peacemakers, and I've been thinking a lot lately about what that means and how we might embody that value, that virtue that we hold on to as people of faith. There was a poll that was done several months ago by NPR, PBS, Merit, that indicated that 20% of Americans feel that we may need to resort to violence in order to get the country back on track. 20%, which is very concerning, of course, as we enter into this season of election that promises to be in many ways and has been contested. So a group of us, 25 faith leaders and politicians from battleground states, swing states. That term battleground is one that concerns me a lot, as you'll see. So 25 faith leaders and politicians went to Belfast in May to try to learn from the troubles what we might apply to our situation here in the United States as we approach the election. It was a trip that was sponsored by the Carter Center, Jimmy Carter. For years, they've been doing work on managing and observing and giving feedback on polls in different contested parts of the country, of the world. So they went to Latin America, and they went to the Holy Land, and they They went to Africa to observe the elections there. But in 2020, they made the decision that, you know, we really need to be doing this same kind of work in the United States. So they've set up these efforts. One of them here in Arizona is led by a group called the Arizona Democracy Resilience Network. So they have a Republican and a Democratic lead chair of this. And it was with this group that we went to Belfast, Northern Ireland, to learn from them. The story of violence in Northern Ireland is long and tragic, and it's often characterized as sectarian. It's Catholic against Protestants, Protestants against Catholics. But in fact, the roots of that violence, the history of it, is much deeper than the sectarian labels that we might wear. So it has to do with economics, it has to do with history, it has to do with injustice. For a long time, Catholics in Northern Ireland were dispossessed. It was the Protestants and their relationship with the power brokers in Great Britain that allowed them to have the best jobs and the best housing. And Catholics were often left out of that equation. They were often run from the small farms that they had as Protestants were brought in and the land was taken over. So what does a group of people who have been oppressed for years and years and years do to throw off the chains of that oppression? There have been a number of attempts over the years to try to take peaceful means to do that, but often we resort quickly to violence. So here's one way to talk about the situation in Northern Ireland. They were a powder keg, as we say, ready to explode.
Yeah.
They decided to take a shot, as we say, at justice. They went ballistic, as we say. Some declared war on their oppressors. Others rallied the troops, as we say, to protect their power and their privilege. So I hope you notice the metaphors that were used in that, because they are used so often in our language, in our culture, that we might even miss those metaphors of wars and violence. And I think it's more and more important for us to pay attention to that language we use, the metaphors we employ, to talk about even the most quotidian of situations. So let's imagine that the Fountains has a committee, property committee, and they're talking about, I don't know, putting new carpet in the sanctuary, something like that. The chair of the committee may say something like, I know, it's a shot in the dark, and our idea may bomb, but I think it's a killer proposal. Don't worry, we have Mildred as our secret weapon. She's armed with a fax, and she's a real pistol. We're under the gun here, so now is the time to shoot from the hip. So no wonder we have problems and with violence, and no wonder 20% of Americans feel like we may need to resort to violence. The problem, just naming the alternative to violence is an issue too. You know, can't we do better than non-violence, the negative of violence? Don't we have a better word for describing an alternative of being peacemakers? And it's not just our language. Turn on the TV or watch the news, and if it bleeds, it leads. Or the video games that we and our children play are often very much oriented around violence and destroying the enemy. The movies we watch, even the cartoons that I watched when I was a kid, One of my favorites was Popeye the Sailor Man. So again and again and again, Brutus has been brutalizing Popeye and accosting Olive Oil, and the tension builds, and I keep thinking, come on, Popeye, come on, fight back, save Olive Oil, save yourself. Brutus has his foot on the back of Popeye's back, and all seems to be lost when finally, with his last ounce of energy, Popeye pulls out the can of spinach and pops it in his mouth, and his muscles bulge, and he fights back against Brutus, and he saves Olive Oil, and I'm thinking, go, Popeye, go, Popeye. The characters change, but the movie is still the same, and I end up rooting to beat the enemy, those who are accosting the innocent by any means necessary. So it's no wonder that 20% of Americans feel we may need to resort to violence to get our country back on track. And there's one more thing, one more little thing. The theologian and biblical scholar, Methodist, by the way, Walter Wink, said years ago that the most influential religion in the world is not Christianity, not Judaism, not Buddhism, not Hinduism, not Islam. The most influential religion in the world is our strong belief that violence will save us. It is our religion. So, a group of us last May went to Northern Ireland to try to learn from the Troubles what we might apply here in the United States. The most, we visited officials from the UK and from the United States and from Ireland. We met the High Lord Mayor and the High Sheriff of Belfast. But the most important and poignant visits that we had while we were there was with ordinary people who have been through the 30 years of the Troubles. Let me say just a word about the Troubles. It sounds like a way to minimize civil war. Just call it the Troubles. But it's based on a Gaelic word that means bereavement. And we experienced a lot of that among the people in Ireland. So we had panel discussions. There was one afternoon where there was a man who was Protestant. He and his wife were shopping out at a store when an IRA bomb went off, both of them wounded critically, she mortally. And his wife died in his arms. Next to him at the table was a Catholic woman whose son went out just to the pub one evening. She expected him home any moment. But when there was a knock at the door, it was the police asking the husband to come down and identify the body. He'd been stabbed at this pub when he was walking home. Later that afternoon, we had a panel discussion with two people that were heads of the paramilitary, opposing paramilitary groups, the IRA and the Ulster Defense League. These are two men, graying and balding now, but when they were younger men, they were out to kill each other, planting bombs and shooting bullets at each other. Now they're sitting side by side at the table, and chillingly, one of them said, "Thank God that we didn't have the internet during the Troubles." And the other one said, "And thank God that we didn't, our culture wasn't as awash in guns as the United States is today." Again and again, we heard five things from people in Northern Ireland, and I'll try to summarize them as quickly as I can. First, they said, to the best of your ability, make sure that everyone gets included at the table. I came back from Northern Ireland recognizing what a narrow, narrow silo I live in. So I live in Tempe, a very blue city. I go to a church that's interracial and friendly, welcoming to immigrants and gay and lesbian people, and very progressive. So I decided that I needed to get out of that little bubble, that narrow progressive bubble. So the Sunday after I got back from Belfast, I went to Dream City Church for worship. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this mega church in North Phoenix, but it's the place where former President Trump has his rallies whenever he comes to town. And it's the home of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, and this white Christian nationalist movement. So it was on Memorial Day Sunday, so there's lots of patriotism and recognition of veterans. And I won't go into detail now in the interest of time of what I experienced there, but I recognize that probably the Dream City Church, their theology, their understanding of politics is a bridge too far for me to reach across to at this time. I've got members of my own family that I needed to reach out to first. So I did that. I went to Idaho to visit my brother, who is as different from me as you might imagine. The reason we go to the polls in November is to make sure we cancel each other out. But I heard loud and clear from the people in Northern Ireland that to the best of your ability, you need to reach out beyond those narrow silos in which we live. And because if we don't include everyone at the table, it will bite us on the butt. So I take that to heart and struggle with that. The second thing I learned from people in Belfast is stop demonizing your opponents. Sometimes that feels good when we're with our tribe to, you know, call someone else the basket of deplorables. But it's probably not the best politics, and it's not a way to reach across the aisle. So I heard recently Tim Shriver. If you know that name Shriver, it's because his father, Sergeant Shriver, started the Peace Corps, and his mother was instrumental in starting the Special Olympics. So he's been working with Special Olympics, special needs kids for years and years, and had great success with that. So people came to him and they said, "You've done such a great job with these kids. Could you do anything to help us mend the divisions that separate us in the country?" And his first reaction was, "I have enough trouble with a fifth grade classroom, much less trying to do something to mend our country." But he thought about it, he prayed about it, and he brought in scholars and experienced people to give some insights in bridging that gap. And they concluded after several years that what divides us is not our problems that we face, but more the way we talk about our problems and the way that we address each other. So they came up with this dignity scale. The question is, do we talk about the opponents with contempt or with respect, with dignity? So on this 8-point scale, numbers 1 through 4 have the subtext, these other people are not our tribe. They're not even human. It's our moral duty to destroy them before they destroy us. Level 8, you know, the upper numbers, 5 through 8, have dignity at the heart of the way they talk to and about the opponents. The subtext is, each one of us is born with inherent worth. So we treat everyone with dignity, no matter what. The religious way of expressing that is everyone is a child of God. So they invite us to sign up for the Dignity Pledge. You can do that online. And the statement that we're signing is, as an American who knows and loves my country, I am concerned that there is no America without democracy, and no democracy without healthy debate, and no healthy debate without dignity. Therefore, I pledge to do more to treat others with dignity, not contempt. The third thing that I learned from listening to people in Belfast was that no matter how all the messages we hear suggest that violence may be the last recourse, the first recourse, the thing we turn to that is our God, it doesn't work. It fails again and again and again. People travel all over the world to go to Belfast to learn from the peace process there, what they might do to bring people together. But the truth is painful. They've not gotten very far in that peacemaking. The truth is that even after the Good Friday Peace Accord, the walls between Catholic and Protestant neighborhoods are higher now than they were before the peace accord. The truth is that the schools in Belfast are still segregated, Protestant and Catholic. The truth is that the first year, 2023, when there were no deaths attributed to the Troubles, was 2023. So they have a long way to go. I attended a storytelling concert while I was there, and outside the library where the concert was going on, there were these young men building this, what would be a bonfire for the marches that take place in honor of King Billy on July 12th. So they marched through the streets of Belfast, and in the past it's been a real cause of violence between Catholic and Protestant neighborhoods. So I went down to talk to these young ruffians who were building what will be this bonfire. So I spent a week learning about peacemaking, and then I hang out with young men building this bonfire. The bonfire is so big that all the windows every year of the library are blown out because it's three stories high. During the storytelling concert, the young men were playing soccer outside, and once or twice the soccer ball hit the window where we were gathered inside for the storytelling concert. Now, the audience for the storytelling concert were mostly older people who had lived through 30 years of the violence. And so every time the ball hit the window, I didn't think much about it, but they cringed and ducked and let out this sigh of anguish. This is a society that's deeply wounded by the violence they've experienced. As Martin Luther King Jr. said, an eye for an eye leaves all of us blind. One of the things that I learned in Northern Ireland is one of the healing things is storytelling and humor. So we stayed in the Europa Hotel that had the reputation of being the most bombed hotel in the world. The press was staying there, no tourists around, but the paramilitary groups want attention with the press, so they blow up this hotel. Right across the street from the hotel is a pub that used to be known as the Railway Pub. But an unusual couple bought this pub years ago. He was Catholic, a Catholic nationalist, and she was a Protestant loyalist. But despite their politic difference and their religious differences, they loved each other. So they bought this pub, and there were some Italian artisans in town who were working on the cathedral. So they, this couple employed the artisans to come and fix up this club, and they made it beautiful. Dark paneled wood and chandeliers and tile. And his wife came to him and said, "You know, honey, it's such a beautiful place now. We've done such great work. The Railway Pub is not a good enough name for it. We ought to call it something better." So she suggested, "Let's call it the Crown." Remember, she is a Protestant loyalist. Much to her surprise, he said, "Yeah, that's a great name. Let's call it the Pub, or let's call it the Crown." So he surprised her later, saying, "I've had the artisans make this lovely mosaic of the Crown." And she said, "Oh, thank you so much, dear." So when she showed up to see the Crown, there it is. You can see it today. I went to visit it. It's there in the entryway to the pub. So you can watch as some people walk into the pub and they wipe their feet on the Crown, and some people walk into the pub and they go around and respectfully don't step on the Crown. Both of them, however, go in and share together a pint of Guinness. The fifth thing that I learned in Ireland was during the Troubles, the church was largely absent. They just pulled back into their fortress and weren't, for the most part, there were some lovely exceptions, weren't the advocates for peace that they might have been following Jesus's call to be peacemakers. So I'm thinking, if any community is about the work of bringing people together, it ought to be Christian churches, mosques, synagogues, temples. That's the only place where there's hope of a higher power bringing people together. The question is, how do we take that abstract word, peace, and make it flesh, dwelling in our life, full of grace and truth? So one of the things that I've tried to do over the years is make incarnation possible with the help of American Sign Language. So this is the sign for peace. It's actually made up of two words, becoming quiet. Becoming quiet. Now you have to be careful, because this is peace, and this is hamburger. So the other thing that that I think about, that I learned from Belfast, is that simple gesture of shaking hands with somebody across the aisle, somebody who's different than we are. So one of the peacemakers there has been Patrick O'Tooma. He's a poet and a theologian. And he was a witness to this moment when this peace accord was signed, and Queen Elizabeth and Martin McGuinness, two bitter enemies, are brought together and they shake hands. It's an invitation, I think, to shake hands with people that we might not ordinarily associate with. Here's the poem he wrote, "Shaking Hands." Because what's the alternative? Because of courage. Because of what loved ones lost. Because it's a small thing, shaking hands. It happens every day. Because I heard of one man whose hands haven't stopped shaking since a market day in Omaha. Because it takes a second to say hate, but it takes longer, much longer, to be a great leader. Much, much longer. Because shared space without human touching doesn't amount to much. Because it's easier to speak to your own than to hold the hand of someone whose side has been previously described, proscribed, denied. Because it's tough. Because it's tough. Because it's meant to be tough, and this is the stuff of memory, the stuff of hope, the stuff of gesture and meaning and leading, because it has taken so long, because it has taken land and money and language and barrels of blood, because lives have been lost, because lives have been taken, because to be bereaved is to be troubled by grief, because more than two troubled people live here, because I know a woman whose hand hasn't been shaken since she was a man, because I know a woman whose touch calmed a man whose heart was breaking, because privilege is not to be taken lightly, because this is just good. Because who said that it would be easy? Because some people love what you stand for, and some, if you can, they can. Because solidarity means a common hand. Because a hand is only a hand, so hang on to it. So join your much-discussed hands. We need this for one small second. So touch. So lead. Amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.